Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we have Dr. Randy Cook, Senior Physician, Executive Coach of MD Coaches. He has an illustrious career that spans over four decades as a surgeon, wound care specialist, and policy leader. And now in his latest iteration, he serves as a Senior Executive Physician Coach under MD Coaches. And so with that, I would like to welcome Dr. Randy Cook.
Thank you very much, Jay. It's great to be with you.
Well, thank you.
And I'm impressed that you get to do your work outside. I'm envious.
Well,
it's raining where I am right now. It looks so nice where you are.
Well, I appreciate the sentiment. It's actually a choice made out of necessity because we didn't have a room available. So thank you for that. Happy accident. Yes, sir. Dr. Cook, before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about your career, which began as a surgeon and really took on various roles and how that led you into coaching?
Yeah, sure. I think my educational background could be described as relatively plain vanilla. I got an undergraduate degree in biology from a very well-regarded liberal arts college. And from there, I went on to medical school. After graduation, I moved on to Augusta, Georgia, to the Medical College of Georgia, where I did my surgery residency. And that was, the basis of my training. But I will mention to you that I think probably the key component and the most meaningful component of my education actually came when I was not in school, when I was employed mm-hmm. as an orderly for an entire year between my completion of undergraduate school and starting medical school. I was employed as an orderly in the surgical intensive care unit at University Hospital in Birmingham. And that was really a significant experience for me. I didn't realize it at the time, but reflecting on it, it had a huge impact on what would follow.
That's interesting you mentioned that, because you talk about your surgery residency as the basis of training, but mm-hmm. you seem to insinuate that your job as an orderly in the surgical intensive care unit gave you a unique perspective that you potentially find more valuable in certain instances. Can you compare and contrast the importance of these experiences early in one's career relative to the traditional training from medical school to residency and onward?
Absolutely. I think unquestionably the vast majority of people that decide on a career in medicine enroll in medical school and graduate medical training before they have any inkling of what life is like for a physician or what life is like for sick people even. But it just seems like the thing to do. And people come into it for all kinds of reasons. And we talk about this all the time in my own podcast. But back to your question. So here I was employed basically at the lowest rung of the clinical and academic ladder. And yet I got to observe from that distance the actual care of sick people, the deliberative process, the thoughtful process, the decision-making process that physicians make at the bedside dealing with these very critically ill patients. I got to observe the exhausting hours that were employed in the intensive care unit where I worked. There was actually a call room for the resident on call within the confines of the intensive care unit. And since they were almost always male physicians, if somebody had to be awakened in the middle of the night, when I was there on my night shift, it was my job to go in and wake these fellas up and persuade them that it was important for them to be at the bedside and get an idea of just how physically demanding the work would be. In addition to that, it was intellectually stimulating for me because I got to hear some of the greatest heart surgeons in the world talk at the bedside about cardiopulmonary physiology and the natural history of different congenital heart diseases and acquired heart diseases. That stimulated me even before I was in medical school to go to the bookstore and buy some books and start reading ahead of time. So, I mean, it just had a huge impact on me. And, you know, things that I learned about what it's like to stand in the shoes of a physician, I was able to observe from a distance before I ever got in medical school. And it was a great opportunity for me to make a decision about if this was really for me or if I should go another way. And obviously I chose what I chose and have never regretted that.
Well, I really like what you said. Life is like for physicians and what life is like for sick people. In your coaching, when you encounter physicians who have high aspirations, who want to succeed, but may lack a certain component or may struggle in other aspects of their life, does that experience come back to you, this whole component of understanding life outside of medicine to be better in medicine?
I think absolutely. And it's not so much that I can point to that experience and come up with some question for the person who is being coached or advice for the person who is being coached, but it does help me formulate more reflective questions. I think that my understanding of where the pressure comes from in the practice of medicine is really profound, largely because of that early experience that I have. And part of coaching, and in fact, the most important part of coaching comes from the ability of the coach to ask the right questions. It's not so much about giving advice as it is inviting the person who is being coached to really think about where they are in life and where they want their life to go. And what are they willing to accept in terms of challenges and struggles on the way to get there?
I really like how you phrased that, where you want to ask the right questions. And I think that's a critical skill because, as you can attest to, often physicians being so successful in their career are not aware of what they don't know. It's one of those things, unknown unknowns. And you seem to insinuate that in your coaching. Can you give an example where you help elucidate out a certain mindset or a certain thinking in a client?
Yeah, it's obviously different for everyone. But many times when a patient comes to coaching, it might be that they're simply dissatisfied in a medical career and they want to think about something else. Or maybe they are dissatisfied and they would like to stay very much in a clinical role, but they want to be able to influence. So the ability to step back, look at the big picture, think about the many, many things that impact on a physician's way of life, not only at the bedside, but in the boardroom, if you will. Those become important things for a person who is being coached to think about. And it's not that as a coach, you can say, now, look, this is what you can expect, and this is what you must do. But it's more about laying out these situations and describing the sorts of situations and experiences that a person will come to in whatever role they are contemplating, and challenging them to ask themselves the question, the very introspective question, is this where I want to go? And do I really want to take on this challenge? And then it's up to the person who's being coached to really make that decision at that point.
That was a very articulate way of phrasing it, because you want to lay out the situations, as you mentioned, so that they have some level of visualization. Is it fair to say that part of your work helps your clients to self-identify, or you would say that's overly simplistic?
I think that's a very good way to put it. Many people who find themselves facing the challenges of day-to-day medical practice suddenly have the realization that this is not what I thought it would be like. And that's understandable for two reasons. One is that they've never experienced it. And the other thing is that I think that the very nature of medical care delivery changes on a day-to-day basis. And again, I'm very fortunate that I've had the opportunity to practice in just about every type of clinical situation that a person could practice in. I started in a gigantic multi-specialty group. I moved on to a single specialty group. I even moved against advice from other people into being a solo practitioner. And then finally, literally reinvented myself in a different specialty with wound care and hyperbaric medicine as the medical director and the manager of a chronic wound care clinic and hyperbaric medicine center. And so, when I was 25 years old, I never envisioned that I would have that kind of experience toward the end of my career, but that's the way it worked out. And so, yes, definitely, I think that has served me very well to at least recognize the variety of situations that people might experience in medicine. And obviously, I haven't been in all of them, but I have had to face the decision-making process at different stages of my career. Am I going to keep doing what I'm doing, or does it make sense to move along and do something else? And those can be tough decisions. And it's very important that people think of the right questions and ask themselves the right questions before they make those very important decisions. And that's where the value of professional coaching comes from.
I'm glad you mentioned that. And first off, congratulations on your ability to reinvent. That's something a lot of physicians struggle with, particularly with burnout in this day and age being such a major issue and lending to the value that you can provide so many physicians that are struggling with burnout. Before we get into the issue of burnout, and I think this would be a nice segue, can you talk about your own ability to reinvent and how that helps you coach those who struggle with the art of reinvention?
Sure. You bring up a very good point. Everybody is going to have to reinvent themselves. I practiced medicine for 44 years. What it looks like now doesn't even resemble what it looked like in 1980 when I started my practice, not only because the science has advanced, but because the, I hate to call it the business of medicine, but it is, you know, the way we actually deliver medical care and the mechanics behind it, have changed dramatically. In my case, nobody was talking about coaching back in those days. So it was simply of a matter of, looking at the alternatives and making a decision on my own and hoping that I was making the best decision. Sometimes reinvention is a personal choice. We have potential clients that come to us and they say, I think I really want to do something different. Not exactly sure what it wants to be. So the avenue at that point becomes, well, let's have a lengthy and detailed conversation about where you think your strengths are, where you think your weaknesses are. And hopefully we by having that conversation, we can help you make the right choice. The other example might be, taking care of sick people is the most rewarding thing that I've ever experienced, and I want to do it forever. But I think we need to make some changes. I don't think we're doing it right. I think we can do it better. So the reinvention at that point becomes stepping into the role of leadership. And at MD Coaches, we think, we hope, our goal is to be able to facilitate particularly those types of individuals that want to make the practice of medicine better. Some people really need to get out of clinical practice, and that's an understandable thing. Maybe it was just not the right decision for them to begin with. Or maybe they feel like they have advanced as much as they can, and they just want to do something different. And we're certainly available to assist with that. But we're very concerned about people that are practicing medicine and suffering from this massive phenomenon that we call burnout.
Yeah.
And we would like to be able to help them not only overcome their own burnout, but perhaps help relieve the burnout that they see all around themselves as well.
Now, that's a great point you mentioned, the burnout related to the working conditions, related to, as you alluded to, uncertainty about what to do and how to proceed in their career. Do you see burnout and uncertainty as one and the same, or as kind of slightly different facets that you have to target differently?
I think they're different entities altogether. I think the burnout is the precursor to uncertainty. It causes people to have to ask themselves, am I in the right spot? And that certainly is the right question to ask.
Mm-hmm.
But a much more important question and a much more difficult question is, once you decide that this is where you want to be, how are you going to adjust your way of thinking so that you can tolerate the pressure that you have, and then formulate the next steps to how you become a part of the solution.
I liked how you phrased that, tolerate the pressure. And you alluded to that before, where you talk about asking questions to identify where the pressure comes from. Mm-hmm. Is that part of your work in identifying what is the best course of action for your clients, an evaluation of the pressure?
It is absolutely key to the process, you know.
Nice.
And we've all heard this most of our lives. You know, many times you have the answers, but you're not asking the right questions.
Yeah.
And when you are completely demoralized because of the conditions that you practice in, it gets to be very difficult to think about what questions that you should ask. And I think that's where we come in.
That's a great point, because there are so many physicians who are completely demoralized by what you stated, the medical delivery changes in which they mm-hmm. find themselves disenfranchised in a certain way. To those, do you recommend, as you had mentioned before, a potential career change out of clinical medicine or a career change upward in clinical medicine? I know that it's different for every person, mm-hmm. but how would you approach an initial client who comes to you in that position?
Yeah, I think the key to that boils down to forcing the question. You say to the client, look, this is something that we need to think about. You need to ask yourself, is the bedside a place that means a lot to you? Is it a place where you want to be? And if it is, then your only alternative is to take the reins and change the course of things so that it's better not only for you, but for the patient as well. On the other hand, if you think that you've done all you can do at the bedside, the figurative bedside, there's absolutely nothing wrong with stepping into a totally different kind of role. And there are lots of them, as you know, there are opportunities in product development or mm-hmm. Product distribution or management of hospitals and management of medical systems. There are a great many things that your experience as a physician can lend to things that are not strictly bedside medicine. And if that's where a person needs to go, then they definitely need to go there. But one thing that we would like to do is kind of stop the bleeding of all these people that would really love to be great physicians, but they just can't do it in the environment that they face right now.
So for those clients, you would recommend remaining in clinical medicine, just in a different capacity?
You know, I'm not so sure that I would say recommend. We try not to do that. We try not to be employment counselors. But we do want to be able to help people really look deep inside their soul and understand what role is going to give them the satisfaction to get up and go to work every day. And if they can figure that out, the rest becomes much easier.
Yeah, that's a great point, because satisfaction is quite a unique personal concept, but it's common in the profession that there is a very low sense of self-satisfaction in the work they provide. Mm-hmm. Is that something unique to this generation, or is it something unique to how healthcare is changing, as you had alluded to?
You know, it's a great question, Jay, and I'm not so sure I can speak to the generational difference. I'm sure that it has some sort of an impact, that it does fit into the process, but the evolution of the way medical care has been delivered in the past, as opposed to how it is delivered now, I think has had the effect of robbing the practitioner of the satisfaction of being connected to the patient. Whether intentionally or unintentionally, physicians, because they have become more like employees and less like independent providers, they have been, they have seen their connection with individual patients really go away. They have become, in many instances, data entry clerks. They are looked upon by corporate managers as a producer of RVUs. And that nobody goes into medicine to do that. You know, well, I shouldn't say that, but I think most of the people that choose a career in medicine do so because they have an altruistic spirit. They have a desire to really make a difference in people's lives and to step in and provide a very highly skilled service that is sometimes the difference between life and death, more often the difference between a healthy and comfortable life and a life of disability. And if you have that taken away from, if that was your thought when you decided on a career in medicine, it's just devastating to have that taken away from you.
It really is. And I think that it makes your service and what you're providing all the more essential. I want to ask you a little bit on clients who may be hesitant to come to your service, but could benefit greatly from your services. There's still a certain hesitancy or stigma in the medical profession relative to others about seeking help. To those who may be on the fences to say, hey, I need a certain type of coaching, I need a certain level of self-understanding that I could benefit from, but I'm hesitant, what would you say to those physicians?
Yeah, I think that's the best part of having coaching available to us nowadays. You know, in the past, if you were suffering what looked to you and everybody around you like depression, you thought that your only alternative would to be go get medical help or psychological help. And there's a certain stigma that goes along with that. But when you're dealing with a coach, there's none of that. You know, the dealing with a coach gives you an opportunity to sit down with a person who is not going to judge you in any way, shape, form, or fashion, and allow you to talk about what's on your mind and to react and to validate your disappointment and validate ideas that you have about how to make your own life better, and to not prescribe medication, not to prescribe therapy, but to give you an opportunity to clearly think and verbalize all of the things that are in your head with no judgment whatsoever. And that can be very, very liberating. And I think that's probably the most important thing that coaching has to offer.
You talk a lot about this concept of connection. And it seems that one of the biggest benefits, most apparent benefits, is the connection you provide to your clients, the connection you allude to for patient, for physician satisfaction. Talk a little bit about how you try to build that connection with your clients and what you see as the bridging steps to build that connection.
Well, it's, as you might guess, it's much more simple than you might think. Mm-hmm. And that is, and particularly having worked as a physician, having seen the evolution of medicine over nearly a half century, it gives you the opportunity to say, you know, I've already been where you've been. I've seen what you've seen, and I've seen some of what you are yet to see. You have every right to be concerned about what's going on. And I think that's the most important step, is to validate and give the person who is seeking coaching an opportunity to say what's on their mind and to validate it, to tell them this is real. This is not something that you're imagining. You're not failing here. You are feeling what you're feeling because of some very real experiences that you live through day in and day out. And it is very important for you to ask the questions that you're asking, and let's figure out how you're going to approach the things that are dragging you down.
Yeah. Now, I'm really glad that you're providing this opportunity for so many physicians. It's something that's truly needed. Before I let you go, I want to ask one final question around the issue of connection and validating people's response. Previously in your career as a surgeon or treating patients with wound care, you may not have had as much of a connection maybe with some of your colleagues, with some of your patients, as you do now as a coach. How has communicating and connecting with other physicians on the level you are doing as a coach help make you a better physician, a better provider of care?
Well, it's very gratifying. I don't know how else to put it. I remember exactly how I felt when I finished all my training and stepped out there, and you know, I'm the real thing now, and I would do it all over again. I wouldn't. I don't know if I would say that I wouldn't change anything. I would probably be better at it, because you do pick up some wisdom along the way. But I don't even know if I'm getting to the answer to your question or not. But the opportunity to have that experience and to understand what it's like to perform in the role of a physician told me that it was certainly the right thing for me to do. And I'm absolutely confident that for most people that go into medicine, it's the right thing for them to do as well. Yeah. But the circumstances in which we are trying to do that, particularly in this country today, have changed dramatically. Mm-hmm. And part of that is because medicine has become more corporatized.
Yeah.
And learning how to think like a corporate executive is not something that anybody acquires in medical school. It's just not part of the process. But it's here. And I think it's critically important that we reassert ourselves as an expert culture. We have every right to say to the corporate executives, look, there is something about your product that you don't understand. You know, these RVUs that you're accumulating result from something that we as physicians understand in a way that you do not. And in order for us to do it correctly for our patients, you need to listen to us. And for us to be able to stay here and continue to function without being perpetually burned out, you need to listen to us. So we need to learn how to deliver that message to the people who, rightly or wrongly, or whether we like it or not, are going to be in a position of controlling how we do things. Medicine is very expensive to deliver, and it needs to be done. It needs to be delivered in a way that is fiscally responsible. But the people who have nothing but a corporate training cannot do that effectively. They can't do it in a way that will be financially responsible for them, in a way that will be clinically responsible for their customers. And I hate to call them customers, but that's what they are. Corporate people, then they're going to have to embrace physicians and listen to what we have to say, not only to benefit the physicians, but to ultimately be able to perform a fiscally responsible service to their corporate board if they're a charitable institution, or their stockholders, if they are a for-profit hospital. It all fits. They need us, we need them, and they need to understand what we need in order to make patients well and make patients satisfied and happy and glad that they came to the particular institution where we practice.
Yeah, I promise you, last question, so I'm gonna break that promise, and I apologize.
I had plenty of time.
You said something that was really fascinating. You said reinstitute expert culture, meaning reinstitute the autonomy of the physician, the ability to make clinical decisions. Can you tease that out for the audience? Because I think that's a really important point.
Mm-hmm. The important thing to remember is that in spite of the fact that it's a little bit distasteful for us, we have to exist in the midst of corporate culture. And corporate culture sees things in a way that is very easy to define. You can map it out on a balance sheet. What we as the physicians represent is an expert culture, which is totally different. It is very difficult to value an expert. But by virtue of the fact that the product that the corporate culture wants to present is dependent upon experts to provide it, we are key to the process. And if we're left out of the decision-making, it will never, ever work to anybody's advantage, neither the patient nor the physician.
So the sense I'm getting, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that expert culture should be weighed against some of the more financial metrics and held in a particular balance. Or is expert culture done right, the fiscally right way to do medicine?
Mm-hmm. I would prefer to think that we don't have to work against anything.
Right.
I think if physicians are doing their job correctly, and the corporate culture is doing its concurrent job correctly, good medicine will pay off.
Yeah.
It will be a service that pays big dividends.
Well said.
And the converse is also true. If we don't connect, if we don't listen to each other, then we both fail.
Yeah. Dr. Cook, I really appreciate particularly that last point, because I think it's one that a lot of people miss, that what we feel to be antagonistic concepts really in a certain way should work together.
Exactly.
And so I appreciate you sharing your wisdom and your insight from both your lived experiences and through your many experiences coaching physician clients. Clearly, we have a lot to benefit from your insight. And before we go, can you please let the audience know a little about your podcast and a little bit more about MD Coaches? So for those who are interested in utilizing your service, how can we get a hold of you?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you. I'm flattered that you think that I have that kind of value. and it's really gratifying to me at my age to be able to participate. But let's talk about who I represent. I am part of a team called MD Coaches. I was invited to be a part of that team initially because the founder and CEO, Rhonda Crow, wanted to publicize the coaching business with a podcast, which I host. It's called Prescriptions for Success, or RX for Success. We produce a new episode every week. You can find it by going directly to the podcast website at rxforsuccesspodcast.com. You can also visit the MD Coaches website, which is mymdcoaches.com. And in there, you will find a link to the podcast. In addition to the bios and introductions to everybody on our coaching staff, and ways to contact them. In fact, if you go to mymdcoaches.com currently, I'm pretty sure this is still in process. One thing that will happen is that you'll get a pop-up that invites you to subscribe to our newsletter. The first five people who do after this podcast will get a free 30-minute coaching session. So you can actually have an opportunity to talk to a coach and find out what that experience is like. What did I leave out?
No, I think you pretty much covered it all. I would just say mymdcoaches.com. So it's mymdcoaches.com. No punctuation or anything, in all one word.
That's exactly right. And so, when you get, you know, once you're in there, all the coaches are there. Our email addresses are in there. Our social media handles are in there. We're on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, the usual.
The usual. Appreciate that. So with that, Dr. Cook, I want to thank you wholeheartedly for your time and hope that we can stay in touch for the months to come.
Great talking to you, Jay, and keep up the good work. You're a good man.
Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
Thanks.